Welcome to Call with Dads. Let's talk.
Well, we're got through
to the whole world of
we are.
The four
I'm
of
actually
us.
Hello the world.
I'm still stressed out and sweating.
No reason. Like I said, should be all good times at this point.
I've just learned to embrace it, man. I just get nervous with it, and it just is what it is.
Embrace the anxiety.
Yes.
You know, it's funny, the whole anxiety thing. I've had, but yeah, the thing I was saying about the anxiety is, like, my son, he gets anxious and kind of stresses out and all this stuff to the point of, like, and my son's 7 years old, so he chooses his shirt when he gets stressed and things like that. And it's like, all right, there has to be something to kind of break that up or fix it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny how
my daughter chooses violence when she gets anxiety.
Luckily, that's not my son.
Yeah.
Father, I crave violence.
Yeah.
Let me go out.
Whenever she gets like anxiety or stressed about something, yeah, she like anger and violence comes out. And we've been working with her, trying to like teach her to different avenues.
Because as
an adult, it won't be okay.
Angry.
Are you feeding her?
Yes. Yes.
All the other ladies I know that get violent and angry, it's usually because they're hungry.
Usually because they're hungry.
Or Chinese.
They get food and they do the happy dance, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, she...
happy
she,
food dance.
She's an odd eater, man. I mean, she'll go through her, like, ups and downs. Like, 2 weeks, she'll eat like a horse. You know what I mean? She'll eat so much freaking food, we'll be like, I guess
where's it going?
More? I don't know. Like, what should the bill go up this month? Did we save last month? I don't know. I can't afford her food bill. And then next month, like, 2 weeks later, she won't eat a freaking strawberry. Like, come on.
Yeah, my 8-year-old's like that,
ate
too.
You just ate a whole box of strawberries yesterday, but today you won't even eat one.
My son recently, he learned how to make bread. Took it upon himself to learn how to do it, and it's really cool. That's awesome. Cool. It looks like it tastes good. I'm gluten intolerant, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
But I got him because the ingredients for that stuff is pretty cheap.
Yeah.
And he goes through bread like nobody's business. And I was like, he said, Papa, you know, where's my bread? We got groceries. Where's my bread? I'm like, no, you can make bread now.
Yes. Yeah.
Perfect.
Make bread now.
He's like, dang it. That's like me when I was a kid, I always thought like doing the lawn was so cool. Like weed whipping, you know, I don't know. Some people call it trimming or weed whacking or whatever term you use. Yeah. Depending on where you're at. And I always thought
weeds,
it was so cool. Yep. And I would always tell my dad like, oh man, you got to let me use that thing and, you know, teach me how to do it. And then after he taught me, it was like, that was my job for the rest of my childhood. I was like, dang it. Weed whipping.
Got played.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's like we don't buy bread anymore unless it's a emergency or it's a special kind of bread, because we ended up getting a bread maker. And I swear to God, when you have a difference of a bread that, and I've mentioned this, I forget how many times I've told people this and how many times I might have said it on here, but when you have a bread from a store and it lasts 2 to 3 weeks on your counter and still is fine compared to bread that you make from home that is hard as a rock after a week and a half and starts molding after a week and a half.
Right.
Because one thing people don't realize and something I've witnessed from working in food service, I've dealt with bakery, like commercial size bakeries where they've created all these bakeries, breads, and so on and so on. And one thing people don't think about is when your bread or whatever is made, you have a week, say 2 days to a week that it's made, sits, and then ships and gets delivered, right? So in that time, if your bread, let's say at extreme, takes 3 days to get to the store, sits on the store counter for say 3 days, there's 1 week whole that bread sat there. Then when the bread sits there for another 3 weeks on your counter, unless you eat bread crazy, that's a month old piece of bread
It's because they put all that crap in. How is it not moldy and
gross?
Yeah. So
put all kinds of crap in it.
And that's why we've just been, that's why we've just kind of gone to, I think the term is ingredient only house, where everything is, it's made from strict ingredients. Nothing is prepped.
Right.
Now, mind you, like barbecue sauce and
certain
sauces, we're not making our own ketchup by any means, but we have our limits.
Right. But that's kind of what we do. But I mean, we don't make bread, but to be fair, we don't eat bread. We will eat a little bit of bread now and then. You know what I mean? Obviously, you can't like eat pizza unless, you know, they don't make, I guess they do make like
cauliflower crust. Or
cauliflower.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
In which I think my my wife is like you, Brandon. She can't eat it at all. Zero.
It's like, a bummer.
Yeah,
but that stuff's heavily processed too, man. The cauliflower crust, all that stuff, it's all just processed.
Right. It's healthier.
All that stuff. Healthy. Yeah. Yeah. It's
not, less less chemicals.
I mean, if you're eating pizza, it's not really health night.
Right. That's true.
Right.
We just try to eat the pizza. We try to eat healthy and good as much as we can, but there, I mean, we're also humans, and we also like to feed our soul with love.
Right.
So, spice of life. We eat pizza now and again, but
I mean, pizza today, don't feel bad.
Yeah, mostly meat.
We make sourdough at home, and
that's cool.
It's been kind of a cool process. Yeah, well, actually, there's some interesting science behind it too. Apparently, like most mass marketed bread has phytic acid. Phytic acid actually blocks the absorption of certain minerals in your body.
Right.
So you know, that's one of the big reasons why store bought bread and processed bread is not too great for you. Where sourdough bread actually eliminates a large portion of that phytic acid during the fermentation and process. So
that's cool.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It tastes better.
It looks like it tastes better. Everybody that I see eat it looks like they're enjoying it. I recently
bread's fantastic. It's delicious. I like potato bread. Have you been to the store and got like potato bread? Oh, so good. I just want to be sat all day. Lay back and like.
For Father's Day, my wife got me some DNA testing thing. Not ancestry for your health.
Yeah.
So I had to send off a bunch of samples, and I recently got the results back, and I started changing my diet. I had been eating some of my favorite foods were on my absolutely you should not eat list.
Go figure.
I mean, it was healthy stuff too, like pecans.
Yeah. Oh.
Just bad for me. Honey was out.
What company did you use?
Viome.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
My health has been better, and then I don't like AI knowing things about me. So I took the results and I plugged it into AI and said, "This is my client, you know, blah blah blah."
Yeah.
Help me prepare meals for him, and it was like, "Sure, no problem." It gave me an interesting recipe that, before I go to bed, I'm now craving, and it's scrambled eggs with zucchini fried in olive oil and fresh spinach and a little bit of feta cheese. I had no idea that zucchini, feta cheese.
I eat about 8 eggs a day.
Yeah.
At least 3.
They're great.
Eggs are so good.
Yeah.
You know, AI sees right through that, right, Brandon? I'm just asking for a friend, ChatGPT.
No, no.
I'm just asking for a friend.
I'm trying to sleep at that, man.
Just don't write a prompt in ChatGPT telling it to write its own code to learn to become sentient.
No, absolutely not.
You do that, it might do it.
I'm over here cheating with workouts and recipes and stuff.
At this point, AI knows everything about me. It's a lost cause.
Well, online already knew everything about us anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, look at it this way. You look at, like you talked about, not the DNA for your ancestry stuff, right?
Yeah.
So what people don't realize is you have, like, what was it? One company is selling... is going bankrupt, so they're selling all their assets.
23andMe?
They sold last month. Yes, 23andMe sold last month to somebody because they weren't making any money ever the entire time they were doing it because they thought that people would actually spend money on the health aspect, and they didn't. Right. Not at all.
But see, here's the kicker that people don't realize is when you do that kind of stuff, even the health, like you're checking your health and such, what it states in their like special conditions and terms and all this is that they say they will not sell your information to a third party.
And then they do.
But if the company is bought out,
yep,
the terms and services are voided.
Yep.
So that they can sell your information too. So basically that 23andMe or whatever company it was that just sold is being sold, I think, to a medical company. So they're going to have access to all these people's data.
Mm-hmm. That would all be these, me.
And then
also
and my wife.
But see, here's the other kicker is they say that if you can delete all your information before they sell, or you delete all your information. What they don't tell you is they also keep a backup of it.
Yeah.
So it's not all. So the company they sell to, even if you delete it, still gets your information.
So on this same subject line, this sort of stuff always terrifies me, because when I got diagnosed with testicular cancer, the doctor is pretty insistent when you're young. Like, you should go store, because I had testicular cancer. They were like, you should go store that stuff that helps make babies. You should go store that and freeze it.
Go crank a couple out in a couple cups and bring it over there and freeze it.
Yeah, you go freeze it. They'll charge you. And if you ever don't pay, we'll just destroy it.
They don't.
There have been too many cases where some poor guy in the exact same situation I was in.
You got three kids in Istanbul.
Yeah, like any time now, some kid's going to come knock on my door and be like, you're my dad. I'm going to be like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Like, that stuff is legitimately frightening.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I worked for the federal government. I was in the military as federal government for however many years. You know, I mean, there ain't nothing they don't know about me.
Yeah.
They got my DNA probably 300,000 times over. They've flooded me with every freaking vaccine and experimental vaccine you could ever think of. Probably ones you guys have never even heard of or even know exist. You know what I mean? So
I'd like to keep it that way.
That'd be okay. That's what the government's good for.
At this point, I'm like, whatever.
All right, so let's do this, because I actually do have a time limit that I need to jump off, and I kind of really want to get into Brendan's information on the 100 laws to be able to address, which you said earlier before we went live, that the name changed from 100 laws from the X post you have to 100 principles of fatherhood.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I went through and I glanced at some of the list again before we got on, and I had to say there's so much in there that it's hard to sit there and say, oh yeah, let's talk about these, because we could really dive into these. First off,
go ahead. Sorry, sir.
No, I was simply going to say, first off, could you just give me an idea of what started this whole 100 laws, then became 100 principles, and so on and so on.
That's pretty easy. It started with these two books.
The
Boy's Own Book.
Yes, there you go.
it started with those two. And as I got on X and I'm talking to more and more men and diving into it, I was like, I need a list of stuff that is easy to reference to say, like, this is what I'm about. This is what I'm trying to teach my son. This is what I think it would be good to aspire to achieve. And I sort of compiled this list, and it ended up being 100 points, because I wanted to do like a 100-day challenge with it. And I just threw up a post on X, and it exploded. For my posts, it exploded.
Well, that's a good thing.
That's so good, yeah.
Yeah, I think 120K, right? Something like that.
Yeah, 116. Okay. I pulled it. Yeah. It's still got the best list, because it's just that's how I posted it.
Yeah. Right.
When I have friends that I talk to about it, I like to just have them, because I have a copy on my phone, like just hit me with a number 1 through 100, and then we just go from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Which makes sense. So what actually started the list off? I mean, I understand the concept behind it, but there's a ton of different stuff that you could actually start listing off. You could have different categories, different thoughts. I mean, I can promise you I can ramble like anybody's business and have a list that probably be 1,000 by the time I'm done, and half of it be nonsense.
The
how did you develop the list? What did you use to actually put that list together, or was it just whatever came to your mind?
No, it wasn't whatever just came to my mind. It sort of goes back to the first book. Like, I stumbled on that book set, which Tom has entered the ring in his competition for me acquiring these now.
Kindred spirit. I stole one from you.
Yeah, one set is out there. Tom got it. I can't afford the... We've driven the price up, by the way. I can't afford... Yeah.
Perfect.
There are people charching like $70, $80 a single volume now.
I'm out.
I'm not paying that. I'm sorry. We stole ours.
Yeah.
That's fun.
And so just expanding on that, it breaks things down into four categories. It's physical, mental, spiritual, and social.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the areas that a man should develop according to 100-year-old philosophy.
All right. So is there a main point or like a main focus in the book? Like,
why don't you go ahead and describe the whole book set and the process of creating your books, that way that they and everybody else can kind of understand where you're coming from with all this. I think that's important to know.
All right. So I'll try to do it as fast as possible. I still haven't got this down yet. 100 years ago, after World War I, right, we lost a bunch of men throughout that. And we lost them either they went off and they were killed in war, or they were broken and they came home and they had true shell shock. And they didn't know how to cope with that. So they're not very good at raising sons to be good men in society the way that it used to be perceived. You had a duty to your society to do this, to raise a son that could replace you and be an even better member of society than you were, to just build on it. Society accumulates it. Barbarism does not. And so this group of individuals got together and they designed this 20-volume book set that was their answer for it. And it's a huge resource. It would be a prepper's dream. The amount of stuff it has in it. It goes all the way back to...
Entirely comprehensive.
Just to give you a quick idea...
We can worry about the...
This is the size of the original volume, right? And then here's what I had to do to make sure it all was readable and digestible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, that's a big difference.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a lot of difference. It's a lot of added...
it's dense. I'm sure Tom can attest to it now.
Yeah.
It's dense.
That's amazing.
With information. And so it was their goal to help fathers raise their sons to do that, to sort of bridge that gap. And my son and I got to reading it, and he and I both just adored it. And we were at a point of friction with each other, and we both agreed to give it a go. And it has helped transform me into a much better man. My son's already on his way to be a better man than I could ever hope to be. And it's even helped my relationship with my own father. Like, it's huge.
Yeah.
And it's helping just through me and what I do on X and the books. It's helping me help other men be the best version of what I call developed masculinity versus underdeveloped. Because the way I look at it, you have boyish tendencies out there. Or that's how a lot of people like to. You're acting like a little boy, but that's just undeveloped manhood, undeveloped masculinity. So we want the boy to become more manlike, and this was sort of how I tried to go about it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, looking at the list, I just pulled it up while we're talking about this. You talk about addressing the boy's character into becoming a man. There's anger issues that you point out that needs to be addressed. I mean, it's very comprehensive in the sense of, now mind you, I'm sure your book goes into a lot more details about these topics.
So much more.
But let's start off with one, the anger issue. That's a big thing that people deal with their daughters, with their sons, with themselves, with their wives. I mean, let's start off with that, because I have a feeling that that's going to be a good issue to get people interested, because we all deal with anger one way or another.
Yes.
So what do you address about anger, or what are you trying to get people to realize about the anger issues that we have to face?
It is, man, you picked a point that I'm very familiar with. It is actually one of the points in the books that I had to grow the most on. When you take a man and he is angry about, he's an angry individual, usually there's a source point, and it's almost always it's rooted in a perceived injustice that he experienced as a boy of some age. That could be a small boy, a teenage boy, early 20s boy, somewhere in there, and that's why he is so angry. And for me, that was exactly it. I had a perceived injustice that I was sort of forced to look at again as an adult with my own son going through his own little anger issues. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at it again with fresh eyes, it seemed sort of ridiculous. And it's why I say perceived injustice, because I didn't like the way that the world was going. I didn't like what was happening to me. I thought that I deserved to be treated better than I was treated. And maybe I did, but that's not what happened. And I did have to acknowledge that my parents did do the best that they knew how to do. So it was just life. It wasn't that anybody was intentionally, you know, trying to keep me under their thumb or anything. It was just life.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of men especially, they are angry about injustices. Some of them not just perceived, but real injustices. And we don't know what to do about it. We don't know how to attack it. We don't know where to even begin on a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't.
Does a lot of it go down like the forgiveness rabbit hole?
It ends up there. Mm-hmm. Some of the forgiveness rabbit hole. Some of it does.
It seems it's like compounding cynicism. Because I've been thinking about this a lot, and I'm not, you know, I'm sure you guys all know, I've said it before on here, I'm a theologist, I'm not a theist, but I've become fascinated with the story of Cain and Abel, and particularly what God says to Cain. He says, do well and you will be accepted, right? So Cain has experienced this overwhelming amount of resentment for feeling like he's offered himself to God, and for some reason God's favoring Abel but not him, right? And yes. And God's, you know, suggestion, God's advice is do well and you will be accepted. And I think, like, I've been thinking about this a lot and trying to unpack this particular line, because there's so much there. It's like, it's kind of like the answer to it all. You know what I mean? The young men, they have the spirit of Cain in them. They have this cynicism and this anger that's developed and grown because they haven't gotten what they think they deserve. And they look at other people that are doing well and they say, well, man, why are these people, you know, to speak symbolically, they wouldn't say this, but why are these people being accepted into the grace of God and I'm not? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's because they're not doing well.
They're not doing. It's a tough pill to swallow.
It's
painful. And with males, we have the capacity. Our natural inclination when we're angry or we're hurt is to strike out physically. That's mm-hmm. our natural go-to, yep. because that yep. is how we're dangerous. That right. is how we can undeniably be heard.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Less so with women. Not that they can't be physically dangerous.
Right.
But that's our go-to.
It's not their first inclination. Yeah.
It's not their first inclination, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The Cain and Abel, he perceived that he was being treated unjustly.
Right.
And he took exception with that.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than do what I would have men learn how to do, which is I had to be in my 30s to learn how to do this finally. I thought I had it under wraps my whole life. And then this book from over 100 years ago comes and just gut punches me. These old men that have been dead for 30 years just beat me with a stick.
Yeah.
Is anger isn't actually bad. It isn't. We like to perceive it as bad, but it's not. All it is an emotion. And how we utilize it is it. For a few months, I've been kicking around this, pondering, that for men, emotions are to be, they're a fuel. And it's not that we shouldn't experience it, but we should utilize it, harness it even, to do more. Because if you think about it, a man that's not angry, he's not changing much in society or his right. life. But you get him angry and fired up, right. he is now willing to do a lot, to change a lot.
Jim Rohn uses the term desperation. He says, you know, men create great change from a point of desperation. You know, and it's very, very closely, it's very similar to anger. You know, they're very similar emotions in many ways. It's fascinating. He goes into depth about it. But
it's it's always nice to find out I'm not too far off.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just, yeah, I mean, you know, parallel philosophies, right? Yeah.
And so we've just got to figure out how to harness it. And me, when I would get frustrated in my own household before these books, it's sort of an embarrassment, but it's just one of those things it's true and I had to grow from. If I felt as though I had been disrespected in my home by my wife and my son, I would just kick the metaphorical can down the road until one day I'd had an absolute enough. Mm. And then I would, it's how I look at it now, I would throw a temper tantrum, slam my fist down like a big angry gorilla and just be loud and angry because I thought that I was just venting and that was okay. I no longer feel that is appropriate. Because I would then turn around and see that my family, even though they knew I wasn't going to hurt them, right? Some big man throwing a temper tantrum like a gorilla is frightening. And finding out that you're frightening your family, that doesn't feel good. And then that would just make me more angry at myself. But I didn't know how to respond to that. So I was just more angry. Mm-hmm. It's just a tumbling down into just being angry. It was horrible. Right. I had to learn how to use that to do better. And it took me a year of changing my behavior from that before my family finally started to go, oh, okay, well, my husband or dad is mad and that's okay. He's just upset. And I ended up taking notes from a lot of the Stoic stuff. Just push it in and digest it. Why are you angry? Ask all of the questions. And then most of the time I got to the root and I was mad at myself. That was why I was really mad. Because if I had just done a little better, then I wouldn't have ever felt disrespected.
Yeah.
So let me dig into something.
I'm pretty mad when my daughter slings her freaking food across the house. That makes me really mad. That's justified anger. Not really, no.
Well, I mean, anger, yeah, justified, but why? Why are you slinging food across the house?
Right. Yeah, right. That's a good point.
Makes me wonder how your cooking is.
Dang it.
It's not pancakes. Get out
there
of here.
There's the crux of the issue.
Yeah,
right,
my daughter's like, it's not pancakes. I said pancakes. Like, well, what's his face from what's that movie?
He chunks it down the hall.
my daughter did do that once, but I think I told the story one time before about with her diaper.
Oh, yeah.
Probably like one or one and a half, like that. I don't remember. Her diaper was just whap. No, that was me. Yeah, that was me. I think I was angry. That's right. It like takes a second to register. I forget what happened. I'd have to like go ask my wife, but it was like something happened and I got mad and took her diaper and like slap up against the wall like filled with poop.
No, that was fun to clean.
So here's something that actually is looking through your list, listening to you talk and all this has me wondering is I've met people who they love their kids for the little time that they have them in the afternoons, but if on the weekends they get frustrated because they're spending all the time with them and they just make comments, oh, I can't wait till they're back in school, or I can't wait for this.
Yeah. And I can't stand that.
But see, like, here's where it goes.
Here. I love my kid.
People are getting angry about actually having to be parents, and they start outsourcing the parenting to schools too. And don't get me wrong, for me to be able to function as a homeschool dad, to work from home, my wife and I both have full-time jobs, we hire somebody to help out, but I'm here every day with my kid. In fact, he was trying to make a cameo again, but luckily he was stopped. But the point is with me, my outsourcing is not taking me out of the picture, and I'm still involved heavily in everything with him. Some of these people, they get frustrated, they get angry, they're tired of dealing with their kids. I saw a lady drop her kid off at daycare, because my daughter goes to daycare. She's not old enough to homeschool yet, at least for me to do it functionally. And I heard her talking like, yeah, I have no plans today. I'm going to sit around the house and all this stuff. And I'm sitting here thinking, no, if I have the day off, if I have time to have my kids at home, they're at home with me. When I go out of town, my mom comes into town. The kids don't go to daycare, don't go to other activities. They're at home with the family.
Shoot, do something else productive. You know what I mean?
Well, it's not just that. It's taking every opportunity to offload the kid. Like,
yeah.
I looked at co-ops, for an example, for homeschooling. And I can't tell you how many people's like, oh, I just want a program to put my kid in for the day so I can go because I don't want them. I'm thinking, then you don't want to homeschool. Mm-hmm. You want a cheap public school alternative with little to no work for you.
To me, part of that, I would say, before Brandon talks about it in his book, I would say my perspective of that is, I think a couple of things. It's boils down to like, I guess, I don't know if it'd be like a narcissistic society, but definitely like a self-loathing, like a selfish, you know, me, you know, society. That's definitely what we've moved into. You know, years ago, what was his name? Don't ask what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And
John F. Kennedy.
Right, yeah, Kennedy. That wasn't just trying to say, oh, we need you to come join the government and give us more. So that was a kind of a, I don't know, what is a euphemism the right word?
I think so.
Kind of explaining that, you know, you should be in service to your community, your nation, your country, your people, your friends, your family, everybody around you. In today's society, it's like, no, you know, what are you going to give me? How much can I charge? What can I pay? And then the secondary to that is, I guess the glorification of, you know, everybody's got that, the brainchild right here on their phone. No. So how much can I, yes, kids are going back to school, bro. You know what I mean? Yeah, freedom, you know. So then they do it over and over and over and over, and then 10 people do it, and 20 people do it, 100 people do it, and 50 people do it. It just keeps growing and growing. This glorification of, God, dump my kids, get rid of them, and get my free time back, you know. Ha ha ha, kids are terrible, blah, blah, blah. And they keep saying it, and it just makes it worse.
Society pushes that too, you know. Yeah. Don't have kids young, wait until you're older, you know. I'll say this briefly, and then I know Brandon has something to say, but I had an epiphany. We have a 15-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 13-month-old, and then my wife's pregnant again. So, and everyone, when I tell them about this, like, oh my gosh, why would you start over like that? What's wrong with you? And I couldn't understand. People ask me this question, and I don't understand why people are asking me this. You know, I really honestly didn't understand.
Right.
And so I thought about it, and I kind of had this epiphany that it's because it's a fundamental philosophical difference between the two of us, and in that, they truly see their children as a burden, I see my children as a blessing,
right.
Because you wouldn't ask that question if you saw your children as a blessing,
right?
You know, you would say, I mean, you just it wouldn't even cross your mind that you wouldn't frame it in
is
that
it
way.
Stressful on the finances,
right?
Yeah, but it is
just like the first one was, the second one was, the third one was.
It's kind of an investment. You invest some of your strain, your stress, and your time for all these other things. And I tell people all the time, man, I could literally go like my entire day of misery at work, getting yelled at, getting screamed at. I can get fired 4 times. It doesn't matter. I can have the worst day, get in a car accident, go to the hospital, get fixed up, come out of the hospital, come home. Then my daughter screams at me, doesn't want to eat anything. And my wife is like, it's all your fault, yelling at me all day long. Come 7 o'clock when my daughter goes, good night, Dad. I love you. All of it's gone.
Yeah.
Every drop, all of it is gone. And I'm better. I'm happy. All of it was worth it. Every single drop of pain was worth it.
I think a lot of dads can agree with that. I don't have a daughter. I have a 13-year-old son, and it took a long time for me to earn this. But I do, when I get home from work, more often than not, he's at the driveway waiting for me to like get out of the car and give me a hug and ask how my day was.
Yeah. That's like the greatest feeling in the world.
Oh, it's amazing.
Every single pain and annoyance and stress is out the window.
Well, it's like, this is totally worth it. This is why I'm doing all this.
Right. And most people don't realize that. I think a lot of what Tom was saying, too, also kind of boils that don't have kids early. I mean, it makes sense to have kids early because when you're 45 and 50 years old, you've built up a life of kind of self-loathing and selfishness. And now when you have kids at 38 years old, now, I mean, you kind of have developed this persona of doing everything for me.
It's, you know what I mean? I call it your
older. So if you, everybody if you have has kids at 22 years old, by the time you're 40, your kids are gone. You know what I mean? So
I think of it like everybody has a formula for success and they are living their success. If you don't, if you're not satisfied with that, you need to change some variables.
Right. For sure.
It's the formula.
I had a kid late. It was 34. You know what I mean? I'm not sad or mad or upset about my choices and what I made because what I did now has put me in this position, which is amazing. I love my child and my wife. But if I were to look back and say, should I have had a kid when I was younger? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I should have made better choices. Had one then and now.
Yeah,
I'm sure I've said this before, so I'll make it brief. But you know, I think that masculine development comes as a result of shouldering more and more responsibility, right? Starting with marriage, children, and next children, and then eventually, if you truly want to become a legendary man, you would shoulder the responsibility for the care of your society or your community at large, which is what the legendary men throughout history have done. And I find it very interesting that the societal attitude towards that is that they're telling young men, oh, you should wait to have kids, you should wait to get married, you should wait, you should wait, you should wait. Wait for what? You know, I don't understand that. I was talking with a partner, a friend, like I was working with a guy at work. He's my partner for the day, and he was explaining that he had been with this girl for 11 years and that they had only been married for 2 years. And I said, "Well, why'd you wait?" And he goes, "What's the rush?" I said, "That's what do you mean? What's the rush? That's not the appropriate question to answer. If this is a woman that you plan to spend the rest of your life with and you truly care about her, that commitment is a gift that you can offer her to show your sincerity, right? You can begin to build a life together once the marriage contract has been established." And he's like, "Well, all my friends, you know, by the time they were my age, they had already been married and divorced." And I'm like, "Well, your friends were idiots."
Yes.
You know, I mean, I'm sorry. They clearly were not very competent men. Otherwise, that wouldn't have occurred. You know,
let's be clear. There's not very many 18-year-old guys running around that aren't idiots.
Yeah,
there's not very many of them.
Yeah, exactly.
So of course they're idiots.
You know what I mean by that, though, right? Yeah, right. Yeah, they didn't establish they didn't establish themselves as respectable men, and therefore their wives never respected them. So it's no surprise, you know. Yeah.
Which
to
is
act like fools, you're going to be treated like a fool.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it brings me to what I was going to say to the question. Mm-hmm. I think that the reason why, because I really chased that down. Mm-hmm. After I found out what was going on, because a lot of people will agree 50 to 100 years ago, something went wrong. Mm. We messed up somewhere in there. And it's baby boomers, and I'm not targeting them. This just is the way it is. Baby boomers were raised to consume things. They were the first generation that chased after and demanded a quality of life that their parents had right from the get-go. They were like, "Well, what do you mean I'm going to leave home and not have all of this nice stuff? I don't think so." And they consumed. That's what they knew how to do. And then when they had kids, they had the latchkey kids. So they didn't really learn how to be a parent or parent. They just had little qualities that trickle down throughout the years, the decades. And then Gen X, they grew up latchkey kids. They had to figure out everything.
Yeah.
And so when they have kids, millennials, they were like, they'll just figure it out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, now millennials are having kids, and we're like, "Oh, no, that's not how that works at all. They're not just gonna figure it out."
Right.
What happened? We're asking questions. I think it's a long-term side effect of men no longer being men in the proper sense. There's an undeveloped masculinity, and it has consequences, and they stretch far across decades and decades and decades. Yeah. And I think the closer we get back to that, the more men that we can get to love responsibility. Because I do think that Tom is right. Responsibility is huge for a guy. I always knew I liked and ran towards responsibility, but I never realized the impact. I just thought I was weird.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm the oldest of eight. So I just thought it was just that firstborn thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then my son, as he's gotten older and I've given him responsibility or offered it to him, he's just taken it like some quarterback, and He's like, yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Just taking off with it. It's great. And it fills him with such a level of pride. Yeah, I mean, right now he's 13. We decided, now I know me and Tom differ on allowance. I'm pretty sure we differ on allowance.
Possibly.
You say no allowance, right?
I do.
All right. I say yes allowance, but only in regards that it's money training, but I'm not taking extra money out of my pocket to give my son allowance. I'm teaching him how to use money I would have spent on clothes, on leisure things, on all of the stuff I was already going to be spending on him. And I'm giving it to him and teaching him how to spend it. But in order to receive that, he must do certain things to make the home a happy place. Because a happy family...
Some sort of chore or duty.
Or happy... All kinds of chores. I mean, he cooks. He does all kinds of stuff. He started a lawn care business because he wanted additional money. Now, this is where I think Tom and I jive really well. He wanted additional income. And I've given him additional responsibilities. He turned 13 this year, and for his, because we homeschool, his extracurriculars, he pays for the science experiments because he loves them, and they add up fast.
Yeah,
but he pays for those, and he loves it. Now I don't. I'm all excited to do it with him. I'm like, oh, absolutely, let's build this volcano, but let's do it. He pays for his own toiletries this year, his hygiene products. He buys them all himself.
Nice.
I cannot tell you the I took a photo of him buying his first hair gel. I was so proud of him. And I thought he was going to charge me money when I needed to borrow it.
Sure did. 25 cents.
Oh, crap.
The interest is. That's that's how you teach them. Interest.
Yeah.
Charge interest.
Charge interest. He has an account. And now... He gets $25 a week. That's his allowance. And it goes into an automatic Acorns account because he started making his own money. And my financial goal for him is that when he's 18, he is already accustomed to all of the financial responsibilities of being an adult. So that when he moves, it's not like, hey, you're moving out. Here's an additional $5,000 you now need to account for. Good luck.
So hold on. I want to add something in here just out of curiosity because – allowances in the money hole topic, there's a variety of issues here. And what actually has me thinking is, like, when I grew up, it was, if you do this, you can earn this much money. So there's several ways I've heard of the whole allowance mindset. One is, you don't give the kids money because it does nothing but teaches them bad things. I work, I take care of it, blah, blah, blah. So I control the money and I teach them. I've heard that where people don't give allowances because they don't think kids are ready to handle money. Like you were saying, you give $25 a week, so you have a general weekly thing, no matter if they do this or they do more, unless it's agreed upon. For me, for my seven-year-old, I have a spreadsheet that is a checklist. He has to, for each chore each item he does. And for me, as a homeschooler, his work is to read certain amount of pages in a certain level of books. Read so much history, read so much philosophy, read so much classical literature, do so much math, explain to me something he learned through the day, go the whole day without whining or without picking a fight with his sister.
Has he forgotten money for that one?
What's that?
Without whining? Has he ever gotten money?
Twice.
Once. All right. That's still impressive.
I think there's 2 days that he has that. But as a whole, I have a spreadsheet, and then I have lines for miscellaneous if he does something outstanding enough that earns the consideration of money. So it's one of those things that he has a job list of things to do. My mindset is that in the future, we're not going to be really, you're going to get paid by the amount of work you do. Almost like I don't get paid because I show up and work 8 hours a day. I get paid because I kill myself to do all these different things, which also helps me become very excellent at the work I do. And outside of work, outside of my job duties, then I don't make money off of the other things I do for the house, take care of things, this and that. If he helps me with dishes, he goes, can I amortize it? I'm like, no, you're taking care of the house. This is housework.
That helps make a happy home, because dirty dishes do not make a happy home.
Exactly. But the fact is his job right now is learning. And as a homeschooler, he sees me work. He knows I have a job. I explain to him his job is to learn, become smarter and better than me. And that is why we push him so hard. He can earn money by doing his work. So where I'm asking the question after that nice long rant is where does the does your philosophy with the allowance come into play? Where's those mingle, and what does the information you've gathered say about it?
While you were talking, I pulled up the chart, and it started them at 6 years old. 100 years ago, when they developed these books, it was 6 years old is when you start. Mm-hmm. And for my son, that's about the time he was in public school. They taught him about money, and as soon as they started teaching him what the money was, that's when I started giving him a measure of an allowance for certain things. I didn't do it the way I do now. I did it a lot different. I wanted him to learn how to do things. I wanted him, like, we knew it was going to cost $10 when we went out to eat for his plate. So we gave him that $10, and then he got to feel like it was his choice. And sometimes to give him credit, he'd be like, no, I don't want that because it cost, $8. I want money left over. So I'm just going to have this small little bitty pizza, and I don't want to drink. I'll just drink water. Like, he would automatically just do that. And it allowed us to teach him tip culture, but the allowance caps out at 12. The parents weren't giving any more back then. And it's comical to look at and laugh at now. It was $1.50 a week. And they were supposed to be able to get like a list of stuff. And they were supposed to buy their own supplies. Some of them, for school, pencils, neckties, shoes, gloves, right. Collars. This was higher society people too. Mm-hmm. I just scaled that up, and it ended up being, this has been a few years ago now, it was $23.70 a week.
With inflation.
I am not going to bother myself with 70 cents. I just give my son 25 bucks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
And that's what he deals with. And if I'm not going to get paid to do it in my own home, I'm not paying him to do it. If it's something I don't know how to do, if it's something I know how to do, but I don't necessarily have the time to do it, which would force me to pay someone to do it, I will take it upon myself to spend the time or the investment to teach him how to do it. And then now, instead of paying someone else to do it, I will pay him. I need to clean my windows. I have not cleaned my windows. It won't take me very long to teach him how to clean windows. And since the off season for grass is coming up, he's actually trying to find out ways to earn money during that. So I told him, son, you can make like a $50 investment on a bucket and some stuff to clean windows and go around the neighborhood asking, like, can I clean your windows for, $5 a window or whatever, and take off. So I can show him how to do that. And trying to make sure I had all my points there. I think the important thing is that we teach them how to spend money and how to save money and how to give money. That one's huge. That's the difference between thrift and budgeting. You set aside a certain amount of money to give, because it does feel good to give money to someone else less fortunate than yourself.
Yeah.
And as my family gets more successful, there are, even in that book, there's different philosophies. There was one family that as the family became more wealthy, they would change how much money everybody in the household got. And they split it amongst everybody, almost equal parts. And then everybody had to do their own part to put back into the pool to buy the roast that week. So that everybody, I didn't go with that philosophy, but it was an interesting one to look at.
Sure. Yeah.
If my only counterpoint to something that you said, and it didn't sound like it was your point, just a point, is if we don't teach them, when is appropriate to teach our children how to utilize money? Is it when they're 18? Because I know children that have never had money in their lives. They get a credit card at 18, and then they're ruined for 10 years trying to get out of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it 12? Is it 6? As long as we're teaching them money, at some point.
Mm-hmm. My daughter's learning now.
See? Yeah.
I don't give her any money. I mean, she gets an obnoxious amount of money from grandma and them every year from Christmas and stuff. So she's got a piggy bank with like $1,000 cash in it. And like,
see that?
But she's not allowed to touch it. But it just sits
that one. That one is interesting because my son does have grandparents that will, you know, they just shower the money.
Yeah,
with birthday and Christmas and all A's, you know, different things. I have convinced my son, and I say convinced because it took a conversation. Like, we sat down and talked about it because he sees that I'm saving my money and I'm trying to invest it in different areas to build that proper portfolio.
Right.
And I have to have a nest egg.
Right.
So when he ends up with over $100 cash, well, now it's actually moved up to $200 since he has more responsibility. So he has $200 cash on him. And what he tries to do is have any more than that, he wants to put in his Acorns account. So that can grow. And he really likes seeing how much it's grown. He's earned $300 in his Acorns account just because it wasn't in his pocket. And he loves that.
That's cool.
At the rate he's going, I think he has $2,300 in his Acorns account. He's 13. Nice. Like, he could go buy a really beat up, ugly, gross car.
Yeah. My first car was like $300, man.
Mine was $500. It was garbage. I loved it.
It was a light, like kind of murky brown color Mazda 626, and somebody had taken a key or something metal and carved Ferrari real big down the side of the whole thing, so it rusted and turned orange. So it was like a light tan with a beet red rust color with the word Ferrari down the big of it. So whenever my dad would be like, hey, you know, because he would run poker games down in South Florida a lot. So my dad would be like, you going to come to poker tonight? I'd be like, yeah. He's like, all right, don't forget the Ferrari. Bring the Ferrari. And we kind of had an inside joke whenever we talked to anybody. You driving the Ferrari tonight? You know, stuff like that. People would be like, oh, you know, obviously this is 25, 30 years ago. So Ferraris were like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Nowadays, a Ferrari's like, oh.
The car I drive now costs $1,500. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Mine doesn't cost much more.
Yeah. I was going to say, mine was just a hair below, and I was basic on everything.
Yeah. If I have a Toyota Tacoma, that's what I drive as my daily.
Oh. But I
bought it because it's cheap. I mean, it's, you know, they're foundational vehicles. You know, I mean, they last forever. They barely ever break. And it was ultra
cheap. They're still really expensive.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are.
I got the lowest of the lowest of the lowest physical possible package possible. And anyway, I bought it brand new. It was like, I think it was $23,000 total. You know what I mean? That was everything, the lowest of everything. Everything you could buy, the absolute lowest. And even though I got the absolute lowest of everything, you still cannot get wind-up windows. That don't exist.
No,
they're gone.
No, those are gone.
$23,000 when you buy it in like 1995. Jeez,
oh, no, I bought it like 2024. Yeah, 2024. Oh. Brand new.
Yeah, oh, that's a steal.
The lowest physical model possible. Yeah.
My dream vehicle right now is one of those little bitty Japanese garden trucks.
Yes.
The Daihatsu.
That's my. I want one so bad.
Yeah, the day is
drive those overseas.
I want one so bad. Don't tell me anything about it. I'll just learn
those
myself.
Are sweet.
You can pick them up like with your hands. Like you can pick them.
Yeah, we talked about hurricanes. I was like, man, I'm gonna have to go get some bricks to put in the back of it so it doesn't fly off.
They have like 10-inch tires or something. Yeah. They're like dinner plates.
That's how you know you're a proper dad, when you're like, no, this is what I want. This little bitty ridiculous thing.
This thing's awesome. Yeah. I wouldn't even fit in that thing. I'd be in there like...
You'd have to move the steering wheel to the middle.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I have a... my Toyota Tacoma, I actually have trouble getting in it because it's like... I'm like squeezing in the thing. It's like, it's ridiculous. I don't like being large. It sucks.
Well, so we started off talking about breads and bakeries and all this stuff, which I don't even know if it's going to make it on the final cut, but Then we finish this off talking about money, then cars. What more can a dad to discuss?
Yeah, that's par for the course.
So food, money, and trucks or cars and Ferraris.
That's a proper dad podcast, man.
That's right. Exactly.
Right. Mazda 66s with Ferrari down the side.
I don't think we can top this anymore at this point. So how about this? Let's wrap up at this point. Sarah, goodbyes. Brendan, where do people go to find you if they want to reach out to you, if they have questions, if they want to read your books, what so have you?
They are more than welcome to reach out to me on X at Pondering More. It's the most reliable place to do that. You can sign up for my newsletter and get all kind of the free content. I break it down weekly. Just one email a week. not going to spam you with one a day. I'm not about that.
Sounds good. Tom, where do people reach out to you if they want to discuss any topics that you've been posting about or talking about? And even if you're trying to sell one of your little funny cups and what so have you?
Yeah, so at Earn Her Respect on Twitter and or X. And my website is marriage-material.com if you're interested in checking that out too.
Good awesome site. Mugs.
Yeah.
Awesome mugs and hats and cool stuff.
Mr. Pancakes, it's down to you now.
Yeah, of course. So the usual, obviously, pancakeswithyourdad.com. That's the normal place. You can definitely find all kinds of pretty cool stuff on there. There's some resources, woodworking, you know, plans and stuff, free, downloadable. You can do some woodworking projects with your kid. Summer's over, but that doesn't mean you can't do cool stuff. Lots of stuff on there. Don't forget to buy merch, T-shirts, hats, whatever else. All of that money is it's what buys nonsense like this. You know, it's what helps us fund, you know, promotions on Facebook or anything that I do like that as well. It helped me, you know, it helped me start my nonprofit, which right into it is American Liberty Foundation. If you haven't heard or have been listening but haven't noticed, it is fully legal, 501c3. We are accepting donations. The website is American-Liberty-Foundation.org, or you can go to short1traditionalsociety.com. There's still plenty of resources on there. Resources are growing by the day. There's two courses. We're trying right now. The funding is trying to grow and pooling. That way, I'm looking for someone that is capable of filming and editing some sort of commercial. And I got to get a price on that. That way I can post it and put some more information out there for everybody to see so I can actually directly fund that from the nonprofit. That way we can put out more commercials and stuff to spread information, spread media, because that's one of society's biggest problems. You know what I mean? I think me and Brandon, we were talking about it earlier. I mean, you can't even go on Instagram, you know, no matter how much you want to go on Instagram and just look at trucks and fishing. Yeah. You can't get away from it. You're just boobs. Nonsense. It's the pornography is so overflowing that it's just breaking down our society. It's breaking down our men. And a lot of what we will be doing is basically counterinsurgency, for lack of a better term. You know, counter media. Yeah, they want to put their media out. Well, we're going to accept your donations, and we're going to use that money to create more media to just flood them to death and overflood them. That's kind of the initial start, our initial campaign. That's the beginning of the American Liberty Foundation for now. Anyways, things will grow. We will have more as time goes on. But like I said, traditionalsociety.com, please donate. We definitely need the funds. And Brandon, give me a link to your book and I will put it in the resources section.
Yes, sir.
So yeah, I think, Tom, you have one too. I don't think I ever mentioned it. Yeah,
it's coming out soon. I haven't released it yet.
Okay, I was going to say, we should definitely do yours too.
Putting on the finishing touches, yeah. Yeah, actually, okay. I think Brandon, I'm excited to get Brandon's feedback on it, to be honest with you. Yeah.
Oh!
Perfect. So, and then with that, callwithdads.com. You can find us on X, Facebook, LinkedIn, I think TikTok, and Instagram. So we're all... Everything's under Call with Dads, and we try to reach out. We try to do everything we can to make sure that we get you people that's going to give you something worth listening to and get a lot of information that's going to help you out. With that being said, I want to thank everybody for being here. I appreciate you guys again, and of course, everyone that's listening to this, thank you. But with that being said, thank everyone for being here. Thank you guys. If you guys can hold on for just a minute, this is going to be the end of the live stream and recording for everyone else.
The end of the show.
That it is. So thank you again.
Thanks, guys.